It really is. It does feel sweet to just sit together in silence. What we, it says on the package, and we'll do a lot of that. I had a couple of things that I thought I would mention, and then really just open up for some discussion, and then we can sit some more. Part of me is ready to sort of go on to the next place, but I kind of feel like today's been pretty full already, and I've gotten a little feedback from a couple people saying that it felt that way for them. So I thought, let's just be leisurely and see what's coming up. So one thing that has come up for me is a kind of looking again at a few of the themes that I talked about at the beginning. But in particular, kind of what are these? What is this? and what isn't it? One way that I think you can take these is as field notes, as observations from many phases of Buddhist tradition, as a picturing of how it can be a person's life of practice. So in a way, that would make you think that this is taking the linear view, except that it's good to hold that pretty lightly, because a couple things. One is, these are a description of a gradual process, right? So you have, it's not just one day you're lost out in the forest and searching and don't know what happened to you or where did everybody go. And the next day you see tracks in the day, you know. But really as snapshots from along a gradual process. And we are, our school is largely a school of sudden awakening. So where does that come into all of this, right? And it's one reason that these stories are not taken up that often in our line of things, although all of a sudden there's a flurry of it. I was talking with John Tarrant a couple of days ago, and he said, what is it that everybody's suddenly interested in the ox herding pictures? And I said, well, I don't know. It's the third time I've taken them up in retreat. But I think that that's a fair question. And I think one response to it is that this is a time when many of us are so heartbroken that we are asking ourselves insistently, how am I using this time that's given to me? Am I investing myself in a way that makes me useful? A little bit like what Cheryl was asking, you know, what is this? Does this pass the test of actually doing some good in the world? So there's no reason that that can't be approached from both angles, right? Sudden awakening is part of what's happening in the world right now for sure, both individually and collectively. And that means sudden awakening both with great beauty and with agony sometimes. Sudden awakening is not always pretty, but it certainly makes us more real. Otherwise, it's not awakening. And we recognize that in a human life, we can, as we sometimes say, although we can't make lightning strike, we can hang out in big fields in rainstorms. And so we make ourselves available to awakening, to sudden experiences of awakening. That's one of the things that we do in our meditation and in our collective practices. And in all of our collective practices, ritual and service and study and koan work. The koans are made for that in particular. At the same time, there are gradual processes, and we recognize them. As Mary was saying, we can see them in ourselves as we mature in the practice. We can notice, oh, it was like that, and now it's like this. You know, something gradual has also been happening. I am more real to myself. I am more open with others. I am more easily connected. And so I was thinking about the connection of this sense of the sudden and the gradual with the way that we talk about enlightenment and endarkenment. And those, I think, don't exactly map onto each other. But as Joan has often pointed out, enlightenment has the feel or the activity that's more like the lightning fast activity of neurons, you know, stuff that happens in the brain, sudden and quick and irreversible sometimes. Although we know that neurologically, neurons that fire together, wire together, as Dr. Hebb said. So the practice has an effect neurologically as well, but there is this kind of quickness to it. Whereas endarkenment we think of as more having the rhythm of muscle, of a heart, the heart muscle, and taking place in the slow time of the heart. So that distinction doesn't exactly map onto a distinction that we see here, but I think they're not unrelated. So if we are looking for how am I meeting this time in which I'm alive? What am I doing with whatever amount of time I have left to me, then what I notice is that I will take all the beauty I can get. I will find it in every nook and cranny. I hope to breathe it in with every breath. I can live on it. And it will stun me with sudden awakenings again and again. I recognize them by beauty and laughter. Yeah. Laughter, which somebody has recently been studying babies' laughter. And they, not surprisingly, said, it's all about surprise. You know, babies laugh when they're surprised. And I'm like, well, gosh, how much did it take to figure that out? But anyway, we do too, you know. And awakening has that quality as well. Even though it's not always so funny. But it also is associated with beauty. And so in this particular story, we respond to the beauty that is woven in it throughout, right? The moments of beauty. Here we are lost in the weeds and the trackless wilds where the rivers have overflown and overflowed. And the mountains are far away and we can't find our way home. And cicadas, you know. So in each of these steps, beauty accompanies us and comforts us and is the awakening. As Tenny was pointing out, the landscape is the awakening, as well as whatever the events are that we think we're up to. So is that endarkenment, that gradual process? Is that why the ox is dark, for example? Huge and dark and unknown by us, to be learned by us, slowly, as the heart learns, slowly and somewhat painfully. You know, we're worried about getting kicked or, ooh, those horns, you know, although oxen are, I think, pretty gentle creatures, but big. And so we come across the big unknown, which is both inside and outside of us. And the more of the awakenings we have, the more we also get threshold demons coming up to remind us, oh, there's a lot you don't know about yourself, honey. And so is there some of both enlightenment and endarkenment in this story? I think so. But remember, endarkenment is not just all about working with your stuff and figuring it out. It's also about tangling with what doesn't resolve easily everywhere. Climate change, you know, people who do harm, the people that you love that you can't even talk to about some things and how painful that is. And reckoning with the fact that you and your ancestors do harm and have done harm. And what are you going to do about it? All of those things are in our endarkenment. And the lightness that we feel in this story as we go along with it, that tremendous of finally lying back on the broad back of that ox and riding home with a little flute music and a little humming. That has to do with, I think, with allowing our brokenheartedness as well and getting really familiar with it. And with the sudden piercings of beauty that come through. So these stories also don't mean that you pull away from your responsibility to be engaged. You don't just go away and do this, right? So it's a journey of the heart-mind that you must do. It is solitary in some way. And yet, you're well advised to do it in company. So there's another kind of paradox. This solitary work is much more doable. And Jan was pointing to this, Terry was pointing to this, much more doable when you are part of something larger than you that's human, responsible to it, held by it. So I'm feeling as if that this may be landing to you as pretty disconnected, but I wanted to share those thoughts that that this story is not meant to be sort of the final word on awakening. It is meant to be, I think, a way for us doing the solitary part of this work to really feel our connectedness with all of our brothers and sisters, that our own heart mind is not so different, and that this is good work, you know? This is good work and a good game, and not something that's once and done. But something about the workings of the heart mind is in here that's to be respected, I think. And so to come back to this sequential thing, I think it was recognized from the first of these stories being used that you could have a great big awakening experience right in the middle of not having done any of this yet. And suddenly there you are, boom, in the vastness. And then you're likely to still have to go do the other steps in whatever order they happen to you because you're human. So I think that those were some things I wanted to bring in tonight. And then just what we spoke about a little earlier, the dance of relationship, that it is in the nature of humans, of it seems to be in the nature of human heart minds that we do a kind of going away, getting a distance, and then pulling back and dissolving the duality that we've created. And it's not that there's something wrong with it. There's not something wrong with any part of it. But it may be sort of necessarily how we work. So feel free to argue with me completely about any of this. Let's see what you think. Let's just open the floor. And you may be thinking about completely different things. That's fine too. Don't stick with what I just said. But let's just have some free conversation. And Tenny, I don't know if you'd like to start off. What are you thinking about?